there's no better deal for $4 than the Wendy's 4 for 4 meal. Start with our Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. Made with fresh beef and freshly cooked bacon, crisp all-white meat chicken nuggets, natural-cut fries, and an ice-cold Coke, all for just $4. No one makes $4 sound as good as Wendy's. Get more for four, the 4 for 4 meal deal, now at Wendy's. Offer includes small fries and drink at participating Wendy's for a limited time. Prices may vary. Offer not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh ground beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.
Mitchell J. Rabin, and I'm very glad you're joining us again today. Those of you who listen regularly know that balancing the elements in our lives from our inner selves to our outer selves, or what I often call inner ecology, inner ecosystem, distinct from the outer, is so important to leading a healthy, happy, fulfilling, and meaningful life, a life of well-being and some sense of purpose and clarity. And we spend a lot of time in our lives focused on the outside world and that 3D dimension, which is so vitally important. It's equally important as anything else, I would even dare say. And yet our society that is so outwardly oriented misses so much of our rich and precious inner life. And about this inner ecosystem, we really know, by and large, really so little. It takes some very special people, real pioneers and adventurers, to check out the inner landscape and really navigate it in a way and report back. Well, today's show and today's guest is exactly one of those people. Locke Kelly, as a psychotherapist at first, and as a meditation teacher and practitioner, student of his inner life for decades, is really one of those people who has honestly taken his inner life, and therefore our inner life, very personally and very seriously, and has, over the course of years, traveled far in bringing back to us all a greater understanding and appreciation of what it means to have an enlightened mind, to be aligned with one's true nature, to have an open-hearted awareness. In fact, he is the founder of the nonprofit organization called the Open-Hearted Awareness Institute. Locke is a graduate of Columbia University and Union Theological Seminary. He was awarded a fellowship to study forms of non-dual meditation in Sri Lanka, India, and Nepal from 1981 to 1982, and has since then, of course, delved deeply into a variety of disciplines under teachers from around the world. Locke has also spent 10 years establishing homeless shelters some years back, and community lunch programs working in community health centers in Brooklyn. He also served as a coordinator of counseling and interspiritual chaplain, he was, at Union Theological Seminary during the time of the 9/11 crisis, and worked extensively at that time with families who were experiencing some of the consequences, the fallout from the 9/11 event here in New York City. Locke, over the past several years, has been collaborating with neuroscientists at Yale, University of Pennsylvania, and NYU in the study of awareness training, which can enhance compassion and well-being. His work, Locke's work and book, has been published by Sounds True, Shift into Freedom, and this is going to be the basis of our dialogue tonight. So it's so much a pleasure for me. Locke and I have been friends and colleagues for many years, and it's a real pleasure to have you back on A Better World, Locke. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitchell. It's really great to talk to you. It's always great bumping into you at different places in the city.
We do have a kind of a synchronistic relationship in that way. And I always get the lowdown on what you've been up to next.
That's right.
Coming in from Yale last time, I think you were with a meeting with a neuroscientist for some of your work. I think it was great. So, really, in fact, I had you on last, I realize. It was in 2008, so surely this is time to have you back. Much has happened over these years. The release of your book, your having been chosen among the top 10 spiritual publications of the year. I think that's so notable, Locke. Just kudos to you. Congratulations and mazel tov. It's a real honor and acknowledgement of the work that you've been doing. You're one of those, I feel, that has just had his nose to the grindstone. And I should say, his nose to the inner self. That's really what I should say. And I feel like you've come back to share with us all the riches, the treasures that you have found, and the simplicity with which we can all approach it, which is really, I'd say, a hallmark of your book and your work. So thank you for this good work. Would you lay out for us, just kind of just lay out your particular approach to meditation and even deeper, just our inner life, because you both align with many of the teachers that we know of, but you've also brought your own, I will say, improvements to access to our deeper self. I'd love for you to just lay out for our audience what you feel we should know.
Yes, sure. Thank you, Mitchell. So as you were speaking about the outer and the inner, in some ways both are so important, and the links between the two, so we don't get caught either too externally or possibly too internally.
Exactly.
And there is a ultimately meditation and spirituality is not an escape from the human condition, but actually a way to be a full human being and live live together in the world. So in that way, that's kind of the goal, and to live from our, you could say, highest, deepest, subtlest, widest, most empty, most full, most interconnected.
Yeah, right. Take your pick. It's like a Chinese menu.
All of those. That's right.
Yeah.
But it's really, in some ways, all of those. But the particular interest of mine is in accessing the subtlest dimension of consciousness, which has been called many things. It's been called spiritual and religious terms, such as spirit or Tao or, higher self or true nature or emptiness that's awake or higher consciousness. But whatever that is, it is when accessed and when that subtle, what I call, just to make it kind of to normalize it, I call it awake awareness. So a kind of awareness that's awake and becomes a kind of open-hearted awareness when it connects with our human body and interactions with others, that dimension of awake awareness is so easily overlooked because it is invisible, because it is subtle, because it is not able to be known by the way we know so many other things, which is through our thinking process and through achievement and through owning it or grabbing it or touching it with our senses. So
it's much more locked in the subtle realm, not the grosser realm. It's there too, but what we're talking about is like listening to the fine notes of a of an orchestra or a symphony instead of the just the bassoon or the kettle drum.
Yes, and maybe even if we were going to even really look a little closer, it's almost looking or listening to the space between the notes.
Yes.
So in some ways, the subtle dimension that I'm talking about is even subtler than the subtle body. In other words, it's subtler than energy. It's actually not energy. It actually is the space within the atoms. It's which makes it inherent within everything. So it's not that it's not. It actually is extremely important inherent dimension of all. Of everything and everyone, and it's what makes consciousness conscious. It's what makes living life aware and awake. And
yes,
when we're operating from grosser and faster moving dimensions of consciousness, like thinking, emotion, identity, which form into kind of a pattern of a little orientation and a habit of looking from there and taking ourselves to be primarily or only that body-mind faster-moving dimension, then we lose. We can't access or we don't feel the support and the interconnectedness and the freedom and the spaciousness of this dimension. So primarily my approach is to help people immediately and intentionally, rather than, you know, long periods of meditation or having to join a monastery or leave for a cave, but to actually access using awareness, defined awareness, to shift or drop or let go or surrender, and to know how to do that immediately, even in the midst of your day, in the midst of a city, in the midst of any place you are, and to make simply a shift, kind of a background foreground shift from thought-based knowing to kind of awareness-based knowing, and from being a thinker or a doer to being your true nature or ground of being.
A beer. Right, a beer. Would you say you've said so many interesting comments in that few paragraphs. And I would love to just tease out a little bit. One is the awareness of awareness. That phrase is like fertile and pregnant at the same time.
Yeah.
Could you share with us what does that look like? How do we access that awareness of awareness itself?
See, now you're exactly the same kind of, you know, person as me is to even ask that question. Sometimes it's thought, oh, that's too esoteric, you know, that's a mystery. You can't really ask how you do it. You just have to wait and wait for luck or grace or for, you know,
you make that point in the book, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's our contemporary, you know, kind of willingness to say, well, wait a minute here, let's slow down. You just said awareness, awareness. Now, how do you do that, you know? And interestingly, the first part is that the you or the efforter or the doer can't do it. And that's part of the reason it is awareness, aware of awareness. It's not you aware of awareness. It's not you aware of your breath. It's not using your attention to be aware of a sound or of your body or of even, you know, attention. It's not attention from your moving mind. The premise is that there's a type of awareness, this awake awareness, that's already aware and inherent within each of us, as each of us, already fully operational, and it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be developed. So the kind of radical thing is in this method is that when I'm saying become awareness of awareness, I'm talking actually to the awake awareness in you, asking
mm-hmm.
that which you may not even know you have, let alone that it actually has the ability to know and to move to do this. And then when you ask yourself, all right, let me just have awareness become aware of awareness, there's ways that you feel, for instance, that, you know, you could even, you know, we'll play with this a little because, you know, the idea is to go beyond ideas into direct perception. If people could mm-hmm. even just feel maybe what it's like just to unhook awareness from thought, and I'm asking awareness to do that, even if you don't know how to do that, and just let
mm-hmm.
let awareness just step back, and then let awareness drop down and feel your jaw from within, and then let your awareness know your throat directly from within your throat, and then have awareness continue to drop below your neck. So you're not looking down from thought and you're not looking up to thought, but awareness is actually feeling the space and the aliveness and the awareness directly from your upper body or your heart space. So that you notice that you're aware of the awareness and the aliveness, but from awareness itself rather than from thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that there's a number of doors, but that's kind of one of the first unusually quick and immediate ways to move from conceptual to non-conceptual awareness. And so that you're aware from awareness-based alertness, really, is all it is at first. It's just kind of alert. And everything's available.
So, yeah.
You have a sense of
so
that?
So I'll translate it into
yeah.
an idiom with which I'm very familiar.
Sure.
I started practicing Tai Chi Chuan when I was like
sure.
21 years old. And the teacher always said, and I had been meditating by then as well, actually I started that long before, but he said that Tai Chi Chuan required the quietness of mind that comes from meditation because you're moving and it already presumes you can have a quiet mind. Because if
right.
you're moving your body, you better be pretty awake, my friend, or you could actually fall and hurt yourself. Distinct from, let's say, sitting on a cushion where chances of falling are not great. So the probability
right.
of being on your feet and moving, if just subtly, is greater. And, you know, that was a little tongue-in-cheek. But the point is that here in Tai Chi Chuan Lok, we would bring our minds to our dantian, or our center.
Mm-hmm.
So we would drop down, just as you're talking about. And
yeah.
what it ended up cultivating was, I mean, there are any ways, number of ways of describing it. I'd like to hear what you have to say. A body awareness. We were
yeah.
connecting to our physical
yeah.
self, not our mind, not anything connected to our thought, but our body.
Yes. So you actually, let me ask you this. When awareness, which is presumed to be aware from directly from within your body rather than
mm-hmm.
be located in a tower in your head looking down at your body.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Because your whole brain is actually connected to your
everywhere.
Nervous system. Your nervous system is part of your brain. There are cells in your heart that are like your brain cells. There's cells in your
gut
that are like your brain, that are like your brain
yep.
cells. So the whole
receptor sites.
Neuroreceptor sites. So when you drop in, you actually feel your body from within your body, and what it feels like is a kind of effervescent, light, spacious, dancing emptiness of
yes.
kind of flowing ease, mm-hmm. and you feel like you're like a cat. You feel very
yeah.
buoyant and free of
alive.
A lot of tension and worry and uh-huh. anxiety, right?
Exactly.
And that's exactly that same kind of first, you know, first move to begin to see directly that, okay, look, this is a way to move out of that little center in your head and begin to know more holistically.
Yes. Beautiful. Yep.
Yep.
I got it completely. Yeah, it's beautiful. In fact, I'm reminded, even when I was studying psychotherapy and Ericksonian hypnosis, in fact,
yep.
my teacher, who had lived with Erickson in Arizona for a while,
uh-huh.
Introduced me to Charlotte Selver, who wrote a book you probably know called Sensory Awareness. And
okay.
Charlotte, this little German woman who was like 90 pounds, would travel around all over America and Europe to Zenzos, working with the Zen students, teaching them about their physical awareness of the body. Coming
right.
out of the mind, leaving thoughts far behind, and just getting into the body. And he described her, my teacher, as a profound hypnotherapist. I thought that was a very interesting way of putting it. But, you know, she had these big balls and you'd play on the balls, but everything was design locked to move into the body. And in
yes.
your way, I hear you saying so much of the same thing.
Yes. Now, the interesting thing is that description is the door that we used is actually the second of five levels of this
uh-huh.
process. So I
yes.
divided into five levels of mind. Now, the fifth is actually interestingly coming back to the body and also having a sense of a heart mind and also having a sense of spacious awareness and interconnectedness with all kind of a unity consciousness, but then also being in your body. So,
would you walk us through those five levels? This is waking in and waking out and waking up
yes.
and waking down. Could you walk
yes.
us through these five that you write about?
Yes. So,
I've been enjoying the book.
Yes. And certainly, you know, for radio, it's in some ways it's such a simple map, but obviously in a hour, you know, I could say it all, but hopefully people will, you know, if interested, not feel they either have to get it all now or understand it, because it's a little
yes.
new. It's simple once you get it, you realize, my God, that's not that difficult. There's not many parts to it. There's more parts to a car than there is to, you know, these dimensions of consciousness that
yeah.
once you feel them, you can move simply through them. But just to say, as I present them, that you can also go and look at the book and then experientially listen to this audio meditations, which will actually take you right through, step by step, through the
yes.
five levels of consciousness and return you home to where, you know, you just are who you are, but you have access to many more subtler dimensions, and you feel very much kind of ordinary and yet free. Not you
yes.
don't feel like, you know, this isn't about accessing like psychic abilities or energetic, you know, kundalini. You know, those things
right.
may come and go, and that's very, you know, interesting, and things release and energies move, but it's very simple and very freeing of a certain kind of suffering that we all, which is the main goal, is to free us and then to bring us into our hearts. So, we start
yes.
with awareness of awareness, and we end with, you know, loving love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it brings us there. So that's where we're going.
Wherever you turn, it's going to be a good thing.
Yes, that's right. And the
right.
way you perceive it, you can respond. And even when things are not good, which obviously it's not like, you know, becoming Pollyannish, the world will continue to be, you know, what it is, and you'll respond and feel both compassion and support. You'll feel supported while rather than just a broken heart. So so the simply the first level of mind is the one we kind of know best and live in. It's called everyday mind or chattering mind or monkey mind or basically our discursive mind, our conceptual mind. It's kind of, you know, that dimension of consciousness.
That part of us that we just refer to as our mind, which is doing all of the stuff that it always does.
Yeah, and that's fine. That is the, you know, everyday mind. You know, that's mind number one. Then the second mind is either the subtle body mind, which is what we just talked about. When you drop out of your everyday mind into your body, you can be aware from your body and you're in your subtle body mind. So you're now out of your everyday mind and you're knowing your body from within. Or if you go to step above your everyday mind, you go into mindfulness, which is subtle mind observing the contents of your mind as thoughts, feelings, sensations. So most people know what mindfulness practice is, and that's basically it takes you from everyday mind to subtle mind or mindful meditator or mindful witness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second one. So, and that's, you know, some people's system, that's just it. If you can, you know, in both of those discoveries, you know, are profound. If you could just do subtle body, or you could just do subtle mind and practice mindfulness, or a lot of people who do yoga, you know, they're doing subtle body, and, you know, there's profound relief on a certain level, but you're still maintained in kind of a bounded system of your separate sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So the third level of mind is actually pure awareness, or awareness without content, without thought and without content. And usually I have people, you can experience it within your body at a very subtle level, or actually I often have people unhook and come to either to like hearing, just hearing, at have awareness focus just at one ear, and then awareness, just as it can become very small, awareness can open and become aware of the space in the room in which sound is coming and going, and rather than focusing on the sound, if awareness opens and becomes aware of contentless, spacious, open, timeless space, there begins to be a freedom from both body and mind, and there can be a mingling so that you're aware of open space, and then it's as if open space is aware. So instead of being aware of open space, you can start feeling, oh, are you aware of open space, or actually am I aware from open space?
Yes.
And that feeling of being aware from open space is is a remarkable sense of freedom and a dimension of consciousness that's both outside and inside your body. Once that you're aware from that pure awareness, then the next level of mind is when that awareness as primary comes back and includes your whole body and mind while remaining open. So there's a kind of a spacious and embodied, what's called simultaneous mind. So you're simultaneously spacious and embodied, simultaneously empty and full, simultaneously, you know, transcendent and immanent. And there's a real sense of a different kind of relationship to your body and then what happens is you begin to feel this heart mind rather than coming, when you come back to your body, you don't locate in your head mind. You don't locate in your thought. You start to locate in this kind of heart mind that has a non-conceptual intelligence and is able to use all the information from your brain. Sometimes I say you come home to your heart, and then you use Wi-Fi to the files in the office of your head. So you don't have to go back up.
Exactly.
But literally,
exactly.
You start living there, and then the fifth level of mind is from there you begin to create and relate. So you begin to enter kind of a flow state, which is basically you start to rewire your brain and your functioning in the world, so you're actually living from here, and rather than it being a meditation state, you're actually talking and walking and working and laughing and responding to people and situations without leaving this simultaneous, open, spacious, embodied,
mm-hmm.
awake heart.
Mm-hmm. In other words, a more integrated space and state with
yeah.
daily, the ups and downs and ins and outs of daily life.
Yeah, and the one who's responding to those has changed, and you have this
mm-hmm.
kind of support of this tremendous field of awareness, this infinite, you know, what people call spirit or God or Tao or life itself or, you know, freedom or, you know, Brahman or, you know, whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
that you
mm-hmm.
feel that and you feel supported and you also feel non-reactive because you're not in your dualistic mind and you're not scanning for danger, so you're not anxious and you're not,
yes.
you know, fearful, and then feelings can arise to you, the new awareness-based being, and then you feel engaged. You feel curious rather than, you know, detached as well. Once you kind of include this sense of new engagement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That is just
yep.
so enriching. It really is to have that kind of landscape laid out
yeah.
that well. I want to let everyone know you are listening to A Better World with Mitchell J. Rabin. We're on every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight and Standard Time, depending on the time of year where we are in the cycle. We have a weekly newsletter that is for free, which you can get at www.abetterworld.tv, abetterworld.tv, and in that newsletter, we list who will be having on the radio show as well as the weekly television program every Monday at 7 p.m. here in Manhattan. It's on the airwaves, but you can also see it at that same website if you're outside of Manhattan. So please join us for what are really interesting and uplifting programs, television and radio shows that feed the soul as well as the heart and the mind. So we love having you part of it. Today, we are spending the full show with Locke Kelly, psychotherapist, teacher, author of a book called Shift into Freedom, a training in the science and practice of open-hearted awareness. Locke Kelly is a dear old friend of mine, and it's such a pleasure to have you on again, Locke, and see the great work, really the great work you are doing. You're laying out something that has for so many years defied languaging. And
yes.
even here, you know, are you full or are you empty? Let's make up our minds. And we cannot
right.
because this goes beyond language. But yet you're able to articulate it. And
right.
I find that to be genius in itself. But I'd like to kind of just circle back a little bit.
Yeah.
When we talk about, because I like simplifying things too and kind of making
yeah.
it, accessible by
mm-hmm.
many. And
yeah.
in this light, I would just like to, by way of association, when you say awareness of awareness, going back to that notion for a moment, in one way, and just please correct if this doesn't hit it, we talk in our inner life and our inner work, the Gurdjieff work and others, of bearing witness, of being witness to ourselves. Well, it begs the question, well, who in the world is that that is bearing witness if it's not us, you know? And how do you bear some level of objectivity to your subjective nature? Well, the reality is we do have that consciousness that allows us to use imagination, to step outside of ourselves. We have that language. And then I'd like to move into the idea of thinking with the heart. But for now, just that. Is that what you call a parallel then of bearing witness to oneself and as well as bearing witness to that which witnesses or to who that witnesses?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's the emptiness and the fullness, which means that it's not either or, that when we shift or when we can begin to language, we have to use paradoxical logic. In other words, we can't say we're separate or we're one, you know, we're one or we're many, we're empty or we're, you know, full or we're we're transcendent, you know, we're, you know, we are God, we're
not
God.
Make up your mind already,
right? It is this dance of paradox, but once you accept that and shift into this knowing from awareness, the awareness has no problem with paradox. It's only when we laying out the map we get kind of stuck.
Yeah.
So currently we're aware from thought-based attention, and we are basically orienting by thought going to thought and thought referencing thought and thought checking with thought. And inherent within thought is awareness, but it's just that thought is primary, and behind it and within it is awareness. Now, thought can't be aware of awareness. Attention can't be aware of awareness. The one we're taking ourselves to be, which is actually kind of a fast-moving, looping constellation of thought, referring to thought, that's where we kind of feel like we're located, because that's where we're looking to and where we're looking from. That patterning is a function, but it actually has become an identity or a felt sense of a local self. When that relaxes, that pattern can't find awareness. So the fascinating thing is, many of the direct methods, what they try to do is, like in Zen, they would say, what I call them the resting methods. So they would say, muddy water, let stand, becomes clear. So basically, your chattering mind is muddying up everything. So
yes.
Don't do anything, sit there, and eventually become clear, meaning the background awareness will come forward. So, however, as many people know, that you can get a moment of that, or you have to sit, 1 month retreat, or you have to join a monastery and meditate for 20 years, or that doesn't even work. So the other method is, more of what is called the looking method or an inquiry method. And one of the main ways inquiry has been done, for instance, one of the descriptions that Ramana Maharshi uses, he says, it's a thorn removing a thorn. So you're actually using thought to remove thought by asking, who am I? Am I a man? Am I this person with this name? Am I a thought? And you keep going, thought to thought, thought to thought, thought to thought. Now, that can work, but again, reports have been very frustrating. So this method of inquiry is kind of a radical thing, which is saying, okay, if awareness is already aware, even if it's obscured, just, you know, without even knowing how you're doing it, be awareness and be aware of the awareness right away as the subject and object until it's clear that you're not looking from thought and you're not looking to thought. And then once you feel that for literally, you know, 3 seconds to 3 minutes, then include everything else from there. And you've just shifted by having the one who's doing it be the awake you that's awake behind the obscuration. So, so it kind of is like, well, you know, why didn't someone do that before? Like, or what? Yeah. How could you possibly do that? Because you're not that, but you are that. And so, if you know, sometimes I say it's like the Columbo approach. I kind of like say, you know, you guys have all meditated, okay, you know, so you know all of it. Oh, just one more thing before I, you know, like talk about anything else. Just let awareness unhook from awareness. Would you do that for me? And all of a sudden, the amazing thing is, literally off the street, 8 out of 10 people can do it in an hour and a half, can learn how to do it. I mean, people who never meditated before, who have no background, and then those who have background are just stunned. They're just, oh, my God, now I see what I've been doing, but I was only able to do it. I didn't realize I was doing it. I had to do these 48 other things, and then this happened, but I thought it was related to something else. But now I see all I have to do is this.
Yes.
And it's really, I think, just kind of revolutionary to kind of really go through and see that it is this simple. And there's, you know, there's like, you know, even, you know, having spent, like you have, many decades, both with our Western objective, you know, scientific consciousness and being open to spiritualities, we're both like, all right, but, you know, I'm not going to just believe something to believe it. I'm going to test it out and see if it works. And that's what I've done. And even when I found these things, I always check them out again.
Yeah.
And it is quite remarkable that this is, it is possible to learn to, it takes as the same amount of time as learning, you know, basic, what I call deliberate mindfulness meditation, whatever time, if you take time to do that, you can actually take the same amount of time and learn how to shift from awareness to awareness through these 5 levels of mind until you're experiencing awakened living in, you know, like certainly glimpses right away, and then the method is small glimpses many times, and then just being interested and willing and to make it a regular part of your life, it just becomes more natural, and the old habit is worn away, and the new habit becomes clearer.
I think that there is a 6th level. It just occurred to me, Locke.
Okay.
May I share?
Good, see? Sure.
We always have to improve on each other, right?
That's right.
That's how we grow.
Okay.
It's called open-humored awareness.
Okay, I like
it. It's that level of awareness that comedians were born into or through tough times cultivated. And so, you know, when you can reach that level, you have everything that is before it. And then you have the humor, which means you are let in finally on the big, fat, cosmic joke.
Right. I happen to agree, but if I start agreeing, I'm going to start laughing. Then I'm not going to have much to say. I know that.
Well, there's no but about it. Forget the but. Just go for it. You know.
Whenever I start teaching, it's funny because it's exactly that.
Yeah.
It's almost like I just have to almost hold myself back. Don't do it. Don't go there.
Don't go there, right?
Because these people are staring at you and they're very serious. They're very serious
about something so light, you know, right?
It's so funny. But then everyone starts getting it, then they start laughing, and then we're all in it together. But, you know, the fascinating thing, again, is like in these traditions that have a lot of preliminary practices, they all say that the simplest and most advanced method is direct recognition. And there's these four fascinating reasons given by this one Kagyu Tibetan Buddhist tradition that says, well, why don't we, if it is here and it is equally available and it is, why don't we recognize it? And they say there's four reasons. One is it's so close you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is, each of these almost means the opposite. It means like it's so close, you know, see it, you know, like
yeah,
right,
don't miss it. Exactly. It has a it's embedded with its opposite, right?
Yes, and then it's so subtle your mind you can't understand it, and it's so subtle means it's not conceptual. It's subtle. It's empty.
That's right.
So your conceptual mind can't know it, but you can know it. You can know it because it can know itself, and that's you. And then it's so simple you can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's just so simple, and you can't believe it because you're like, well, why am I suffering so much? It can't be this simple.
Right. This is what I've been looking for all my life, and you're telling me it's right here in the middle of my nose, my face.
It's like, don't I have to, you know, like run around the reservoir a couple times? You know,
exactly,
do something?
Exactly. just like Dorothy said at the end of the movie, you know, there's no place like home. All you have to do is tap your heels, you know?
Yes.
Click your heels. Please, go on.
And then the fourth one is really the kicker. It's so good, you can't accept it. It's so good you can't believe how could I have earned this? How could it be so good for me?
Yes.
Maybe for someone else, but I'm going to start listing all the terrible things that I've thought and done, and you know, it's like no, you're good. We're all good.
Yes.
We're basic goodness.
Yes.
It's so good that let's all accept it. Let's all be good, accept what's good, and then we can live the good life, meaning we can all help each other live on this planet.
Yeah, I mean, sure. There's a beautiful old phrase from the Taoist tradition that goes something like this, Locke. Everyone looks for the Tao far away and thinks of it as so complicated when it is so nearby and so simple.
That's it.
Same thing.
That's it. So then once, you know, this kind of, I said, okay, so keep it simple. Give context, give framework, lead people in this door, lead people in that door. Maybe they have different learning style. You know, that's what's getting in the way, but it's simple, now try this. It's simple, now try this. Simple, now try that. And then the third one, they'll go, oh, those first two I didn't get. Oh, the third one. Oh.
Right.
Oh, well,
exactly.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
I did. You know.
This wasn't the right one for you, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And you, in your book, if I may say, you give such allowance for the different ways. You lay it out like an awesome, highly compassionate school teacher who walks people through the options, who also says everyone is unique and you do it your way. You wake up your awakeness, not mine.
Yes.
And
right.
you give such, I will put it, as a compassionate allowance for whatever shows up, that there's no failing. And that's a really important idea here.
Yeah.
There's
yes.
no way to fail. You cannot
no.
fail. And I will say that when I started listening, actually, to the Sounds True CDs and
yes.
started doing the glimpse practices myself, I instantly,
yes.
first exercise, ear, instantly got it. And I went, oh, my, this is so brilliant. Because
yes.
it's so simple, its brilliance is in its simplicity.
Yes.
So, you know, I want to just really thank you for taking the time. You know, what is that great
yeah.
phrase? I didn't have enough time to say it very simply, you know.
That's right.
Right, you know.
That's good.
And you took the time to make it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I'd like to make another point from something
okay.
that you were saying to extrapolate, which is this idea of a misidentity. And
yes.
that's not like miss and mister. That's like
right.
a mistaken identity,
mistaken
you know.
Identity,
and
yes.
we are all living from
yes.
an identity that is usually in our society with our head brain. And
yes.
science has shown us that we have brain material and our nervous system that is strewn throughout our entire body, as you and
yeah.
I were saying at the very beginning. We have neuroreceptor sites in our heart, some 40,000
yep.
neurons.
Yeah.
We have those same in our gut. We have what we can call a gut brain, you know. And so when you really start to look at all of this, you see that we're a huge brain in some ways. We're the body electric. And
mm-hmm.
this is
yeah.
very exciting. This is very cool. But because we have on some different levels made a choice to operate out of only one small little narrow platform of neural activity, which occurs between our two ears in our skull, when we have all of this other rich material, why would we want to limit our identity to that? But in fact, that is so much of what we have done. And I feel that you are helping to invite us to have a much larger sense of our identity with our true nature, ultimately, but by
yeah.
using these glimpse exercises to explore what it's like to feel that you're operating out of another place.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful work.
Yes, thank you.
Am I getting the notes here?
Yeah, I'm going to say a couple things that came up that I think are helpful.
Please.
As I'm traveling around, you know, the country and kind of gathering.
Yeah, you just came back from the Bay Area and Portland.
Yeah, feedback.
Teaching and sharing,
there was a group that had read my book, you know, like a group of 75 for 8 weeks. They had done a study, and they were like just reporting all these experiences, and they were having certain questions, which I think are important. As you say, those who are listening, the audio is the simplified version, and the experiential version will lead you right through, you know, in like short 3 to 8 minute guided, you know, tour of your own consciousness.
Yes.
But that mistaken identity is you know almost like a developmental stage, you know, or a developmental pattern that we aren't, you know, that's just kind of such a habit culturally, biologically, that it needs a kind of developmental stage, you know, so that, you know, I say that awakening is the next natural stage of development, but it needs,
yes,
like school-age development, you know, a lot of the early stages of life happen by themselves, you know, around the world, similar times. But when you get to school age development, if you don't go and learn to read and write, you won't learn to read and write. So this is, if you don't learn to wake up, you'll probably stay in the old developmental stage of pre-reading.
Yes.
So this is, you know, something, but in the same way, it takes about as much time as a kid to learn to read as for adult to learn to wake up. I think that
mm-hmm.
is clear.
Interesting.
And the other thing just to say about mistaken identity is that, you know, people get scared when this whole no self or going beyond my ego or killing my ego. And what is discovered is that when the mistaken identity relaxes, that pattern, which is kind of thinking and ego function, which is your own functioning as a physical and mental creature, remembering, you know, your phone number, remembering who you are,
yes.
where you work, you know, that function of your ego body and your thinking, which is looping and creating a little mini-me feeling in your brain, when that
yes.
relaxes, the functions just return to their natural state. No ego identity is killed. It currently thinks it's going to get killed, and it's trying to maintain its identity. But when it relaxes, and most importantly, the thing that's most helpful is that I found and why I do this approach the way I do is
mm-hmm.
I introduce people to the next operating system right away rather than leaving you in the gap of no self
yes.
or the gap of not knowing. But you go right from the conceptual knowing to the not knowing that knows is embodied. And so you
yes.
feel that you're, when you have, you feel the absence of that center, self-center, but you feel like your personality is the same. You didn't lose your personality. You still can laugh. If you
mm-hmm.
liked Chinese food before, you'll still like Chinese food now. If you didn't, you won't. You know, you don't lose.
Yeah.
You don't lose anything except the pain, suffering, and neurosis of your life. You still have your own, you know, and you still have your own growth to do in other areas of life, you know, that's not, you don't become instantly perfect either. But the main thing to assure people that, you know, you'll be free and you'll be you and you'll be connected to the ocean of awareness, which your identity will be bigger. And it'll be emptier, but it'll be fuller, and it'll be also what they say, you know, call in Zen, ordinary mind. You'll just be like,
mm-hmm.
you know, some people are like, oh, well, there's no fireworks. I'm just me,
yes.
except minus all the suffering. And it's like,
right.
yeah, that's right. That's it. So that's, you know, that's kind of important.
Trungpa Rinpoche used to call that ordinary magic. And was
yes.
the basis of his basic goodness practices
yes.
in the
that's
Shambhala
right.
program. Yeah,
and that's what people
no,
feel.
You're absolutely
so,
there.
So to say that what happens is that people feel the basic goodness, and when I ask for reports, like, what's that like, what's going on now, people say, well, you know what, I feel like I'm okay, that who I am is not a problem. There's nothing wrong with me. And what that is that shame has gone, like the sense of something's wrong, I'm worthless, I'm unlovable, I'm bad, dumb.
Yes.
Like that goes. And
yes.
and people feel the opposite, a sense of, well, I feel safe, I feel all is well. And that's like not a belief that they're reporting. That's like
that's
really,
right.
like really, really feeling.
Experience.
Like, oh, you know what? I'm okay.
Yes.
Everything's okay.
Yes.
You know, and it's just like, wow, what a relief.
Mm. So beautiful. No,
yeah.
really, and you put it so nicely. You really do. It's a real joy. Different minds are spinning. however, they are coherent at the
okay.
same time. No, I so appreciate all that you're sharing here with us and our audience
yeah.
here. And it's very touching. And it's awakening all parts. And how healthy can it be? You know, I mean, it's a decontraction from everything in our physical body and, if you will, our mental and emotional bodies. It's an allowance of a shift of attention, of awareness, and it takes us out of ordinary habituated thinking. And but I've got to tell you, I'm reflecting on why it has been so difficult for so many thousands of years at this point for people to wake up. And one of a couple of the reasons, Locke, is that people have had a lock on information. Even going back to the ancient Tibetan Buddhists with Milarepa and Tsalopa and Marpa and the Zen tradition and the Chan tradition, a lot of people were actually making not a small amount of money, and they were gaining not a small amount of power and prestige by being the caretakers of knowledge. And even though this is the opposite of compassion, they, you know, you could say there was hoarding going on. I know in the Chinese tradition, when it comes to things like Tai Chi Chuan, it was transmission through family. And if you were fortunate enough to know that family, the knowledge would be sort of meted out to you, small bite size by small bite size. And if you wanted more, you virtually had to beg and knock down the door, wait for years, be told you're not ready, just one story or another. And this actually forms a large part of the wisdom traditions across the planet of a level of ownership of information and not letting the mindset be as fluid and open as you have, honestly, in your book, which says anybody can do this, folks. Anybody can access this level of their own higher nature, their own true nature, and it's a glimpse practice, and you can do it this way or that way or this way or that way, and just if you keep applying it, you're going to be dehabituating yourself from your ordinary, let's say, habitual mindset, and you'll move into this other space, which is the richness I'm suggesting has already been there, is, as Werner Erhard used to say, already the case, you know. So could you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there certainly is some, you know, institutionalization, you know, which is kind of part
of
our human way of organizing information that then creates a club, you know, the insiders and the outsiders, and, you know, just like all religious
other
and organizational
institutions.
Other institutions around, you know, city-states or tribal culture, or, you know, that the same organization happens with knowledge or scientific societies or spiritual meditation societies, that it ends up being a group that wants to, that ends up, even though they don't know it, it's almost like a group, you know, group think that creates this.
That's
well,
right. Group think,
let's just not share it, because, you know, there might be some who really might misuse it. Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. So there's something of that mentality, and I agree, and I see that, and I address that, and I just say, you know, I've looked at that, and I've listened, and I've asked people, well, why not? Why haven't you done it? What is there? Is there danger? And interestingly, one of my teachers just said that the only danger of this direct method is actually intellectualization. In other words, that you learn it, but then you actually go back to your mind and create an intellectual version of it. So that's, you know, that's a danger, but it's not. These are not practices where your body is going to get hurt, or you're going to go insane, or that, you know, the other is that you sometimes become prideful, but, you know, what happens is if you really experience this, you really lose all pride. You just don't feel like you own anything. You know, it's not the case. And then the other one is something about a sense that, well, it's so precious, we can't just give it out, because some people, if they misunderstand it, they won't come back. You know, they'll miss it, and they won't, you know, won't value it. But it's much more dangerous, I feel now, to not have, if we have this technology of awakening, these simple pointers to who we are, it's more dangerous to not share them and to not give them out freely and to not allow people to awaken and begin to be compassionate, you know, more naturally and, you know, find creative ways to share it with others. Because
yes.
that's likely to be one of the linchpins for our survival of our planet.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up. I wanted to come to that. This is
yeah.
not just sort of like some kind of leisure time. You know, I think I would like to access more of myself, you know, because
yeah.
why not? No. This is actually a matter of survival because these
yeah.
practices and this inner work sensitizes us. It subtilizes us to be able to feel, you know, the wings of a butterfly fluttering so that we would be so attuned to the nature and vibration of nature, of reality,
yeah.
that we will want to, we feel the impulse to protect, to love, to nurture all sentient life around us, which of course is the basis of the Bodhisattva vow, you know,
yeah.
to work for the liberation of all sentient beings. And we can, without even taking such a vow, can live on that extraordinary frequency. And when we are feeling that, you do no harm, you know. We are beings that seek to preserve our Mother Earth, our Gaia, and appreciate
yeah.
each other. And that is our way to harmony and sustainability, not,
that's right.
you know, the way we're doing it. So
it's,
that's
yeah,
how important the work is that you're doing.
It is. It's a linchpin,
yeah.
and that's what it's for. It's not, you know, it's not the whole thing. Everyone else's contribution and, you know, is important, and other things, you know, and external things that people are doing to help bring us together. And
indeed, it's all
know,
part of the whole.
All part of the whole.
Yeah,
but this creates a whole different motivation that doesn't come from fear and shoulds. I mean, I know you probably have seen, and I have, you know, a gathering of peace activists, you know, organizing a peace rally, and then they're, you know, end up arguing about what, you know, who's going to
yeah,
be doing
exactly.
this, or this, you know. So it's like this is kind of
yeah.
a motivation that's different. That's not about that. It's about like.
That's right.
Yeah, let's go. Let's you know, we're doing this. We're all together. It's possible. Let's show up and and it yeah. So it's very hopeful, and it's like starting with that, you know, that child's picture of, you know, one side is a picture of the globe with all the countries, and the other side is the picture of, you know, like the puzzle of the picture of themselves. And, you know, if you put that
yes.
together first, you'll have the, you know, you'll have a ground to be able to respond and have a new motivation from.
Uh-huh. That's right. Well, this has been utterly wonderful to talk with you about this work that you're doing, well, we're doing, and I feel you've articulated it in a way that is designed to help really many thousands of people, and
yes.
For which I am grateful. So,
thank you, Mitchell, for all the work you do and sharing it with your audience.
Oh, well, sure. Of course, Locke. Thank you. What is the way people can get in touch with you, your website?
Yes. So the website is simply www.lockkelly.org, which is lockkelly.org. It's a nonprofit organization, and the website has events, and it has links to my book and CD, and there's a online course going on that people could join, and different retreats coming up that are good for a little more in-depth work. But, the first thing is, if nothing else, I mean, I would say even getting the audio rather than the book. If you're going to do one thing or try one thing out, you can't go wrong. And if it's the pith or the essence of the whole thing that's simplified into practical, and you put it on, you download it onto your computer, put it on your phone, and you can do it with your eyes open on a subway. It's actually, not something, it's something meant to train you to be awake in the world.
Yes.
So.
That is, it's what we need.
Yes.
It's what we need. We'll have you on again, and we'll pick up where we left off, okay? If such a thing is possible, but we'll try. So thank you again, Locke Kelly, for your good work and for coming onto our show today and sharing with our audience. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Mitchell. Yeah.
Sure. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Be well. Shift into Freedom, the Science and Practice of Open-Hearted Awareness is his book. And as he was just mentioning, Shift into Freedom sounds true, has a wonderful CD set, and Locke walks one through the various glimpse practices, and one can begin to build a mental muscle, if you will, an awareness muscle, even better, and access this deeper part of ourselves that comes to fruition through his gentle, loving guidance and patient guidance, as I said, and we were both making reference to throughout today's show. Well, I really appreciate your coming today again and visiting a better world, and your visits actually help to make it a better world. I want to remind you all that we are also a nonprofit 501c3, a Better World Foundation, and any donation, contribution, investment helps keep us on the air and expanding our platform. We're also looking for interns, preferably in the New York area, but not necessarily, to help us with developing social media and actually even doing some editing, audio and video. So if you qualify, certainly give us a call here at 212-420-0800. That's 212-420-0800, or email, and I love to hear your comments anyway. It helps me offer you even better shows. We're going for leadership, folks. We're looking to build leaders on our planet, and the work that Locke is doing is really helping people access all of themselves and bring it forward into the world so we can. We're in trouble. We're in a lot of trouble right now. Economically, environmentally, socially, politically. It's pretty obvious to one and all, and we need big-hearted, open-minded, creative, imaginative people with integrity, with stamina, to work through this transition period. It's actually also very exciting. Trouble in River City? True. But getting out, the transition into another level of our beingness, oh my, and the kind of world that will create, that's our game here at A Better World, folks. So, that email address, you thought I forgot, I did not, mjr@abetterworld.net, my initials, mjr@abetterworld.net, and again, thank you for joining. Take this link also and share it with your friends. Let others know about what we're doing here at A Better World, and visit our website, of course, betterworld.tv, and for consultations with me or to participate in our workshops, go to mitchellrabin.com. Thank you again, and I look forward to seeing you all.
it's Flo, and this is my impression of a drill instructor directing a musical.
Tan Hut! Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands! Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step ball change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.